Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, this is Debron Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the third week of June. Our main topic for today is the second part of Birding by Ear, recorded last month with birder extraordinaire Dr. Fred Sharp. And our sound engineer extraordinaire, Charlie Fleischman, has graciously agreed to help me tell you about our general observations for the week, along with upcoming events. Welcome to this side of the mic, Charlie. But before we get to our main topic, let's first hear the mystery sound of the week. A big hint for our mystery sound this week is that it is one of the calls that we covered in part one of our program. So your chances are very good of identifying it if you've been doing your homework and learning your bird calls this past month. We'll play it again at the end of the program and tell you what it is.
The first order of the week is to wish you a very happy summer season, with summer officially starting this Monday, the 20th of June. Summer solstice is, of course, the longest day of the year, with the Olympic Peninsula experiencing a full 16 hours of sunlight on Monday. This year we had an additional treat, a rare coincidence that had the full moon also falling on this day, the first time that this has happened since 1967.
Woohoo! It's also National Pollinators Week, and Jeff Hammerson sent us some lovely photos of some of our favorite pollinators, the butterflies. He notes, tiger swallowtails have been patrolling back and forth on their ranges for weeks now and chasing one another. Earlier, they were chased by feisty, overwintered mourning cloaks, but the latter now mostly have reproduced and disappeared, unquote. Tiger swallowtails are the large, showy, yellow and black striped butterflies, while mourning cloaks, as the name implies, have a beauty that's much more subtle, with wings of dark brown, edged with pale yellow and a row of blue dots. He has also been noticing native bumblebees, non-native honeybees, and Anna's hummingbirds feeding on non-native Himalayan blackberry flowers.
One of the showiest native shrubs flowering in our area right now is ocean spray, a rather romantic name that describes the abundant, pendulous clusters of tiny cream-colored flowers of this shrub. Some are not very fond of this plant, which can reach the size of a small tree, because it can be difficult to clip back due to its very hard stems. The other common name for this shrub is indeed ironwood, due to the hardness and strength of its wood. It was used to make digging sticks, spear and harpoon shafts, bows and arrows, salmon barbecuing sticks, inner bark scrapers, and halibut hooks by virtually all native coastal people from southern British Columbia southwards. This wood was made even harder by heating it over a fire, and was then usually polished with horsetail stems.
Most of our native shrubs are now long past the pollinating phase, however, and are well on their way to producing ripe fruit, some more succulent to human taste than others. I was very excited to find the first thimbleberries and native trailing blackberries ripe a few days ago. These are my favorite of all berries, including domestic strawberries and raspberries. Ripe red elderberries and salmonberries have been abundant for a couple of weeks now, and are one of the staple food sources for many birds in our area, including American robins and Swainson's thrush.
Young fledged birds can be seen everywhere, following their parents about and begging for food, and include chestnut-backed chickadees, Pacific wrens, hairy woodpeckers, red-breasted nuthatches, brown creepers, song sparrows, and lots of mallard ducklings in various stages of development. While some birds are busy taking care of young, others are still sitting on eggs, while others, such as the newly arrived nighthawks, are just starting their dramatic evening diving courtship displays. Jeff Hammerson also sent us a remarkable photo of a Virginia rail that he saw displaying at Cotai Lagoon. He said that they are very active right now, giving their peculiar grunting duets that help create pair bonds.
Jeff has also been seeing stag beetle adults emerging from stumps and logs. The males have huge antler-like jaws used for combat, while the larvae feed on rotting wood. I have meanwhile been watching a small cluster of yellow jackets building a nest on the side of my porch. Yellow jackets are such effective predators on a variety of insect pests that I value having them around, as long as the nest does not get to be too large or in a place too close to human or pet activity. We'll see how that goes.
And lastly, from the amazing world of mammalian behavior, we have another photo from Jeff displaying a large Russula mushroom stuck in a wooden trellis at their place where a Douglas squirrel had stashed it for later dining. And for dining on a much larger scale, Frank Converse told us of watching a gray whale churning up a cloud of mud a couple of weeks ago as it searched for invertebrates in the huge tidal flats near the mouth of the Snohomish River, swimming in about 15 feet of water. We had no idea that an animal that large would ever feed or travel in water that shallow.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I had no idea. And now for our main topic, we're back to the amazing world of birds, where Fred Sharp will continue to speak with us about the wonders of birdsong. Our first set is the Wren family. They're some of my favorites.
Amazing songsters, tiny little guys, but man, can they belt it out. And first one here to celebrate is the remarkable winter wren.
Or now called the Pacific wren, right?
You bet. What a fabulous long cadence of the little winter wren.
I think they might be my favorite bird ever. They're just this pint-sized, perky little thing,
yeah,
and they just belt out this amazingly beautiful song.
Big attitude, over 100 individual notes in that lovely, long, flowing cadence, and very common nesting around our forest understories, both mixed and coniferous understories. You'll see the young flitting out about the nest in a few weeks. Remarkable little songster.
They're just so faithful. They're here year-round doing their thing.
Yep. Often nesting in woody debris and in root wads, even occasionally taking to nest boxes.
And to compare it to, we have next the
lovely house wren. The cheery house wren, it's fast, it's loud, and it's much more of a specialist of dry areas here on the Olympic Peninsula. We get them predominantly around Squim and Port Townsend, occasionally extending down far south as Quilocene, but they really like the dry forested edges, dry coniferous edges, and a bit of thickets, but definitely a specialty of the northeast Olympic Peninsula.
Well, and I heard the first one in my neighborhood, the first pair, a few weeks ago, and I'd never heard them before, but it was in a neighbor's area that was just a little bit drier than my own.
Yep, dry open sites. Scott Gremmel, who's been doing quite a bit of work, he works for the Park Service, and he's been looking at songbird communities, and he finds that house wrens can extend fairly high up in elevation, colonizing sites that have been recently visited by wildland fire.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that.
It's part of the natural change in avian communities. It's nice to see that the park is pursuing, where they can, safely a let-burn policy in some of the interior forest areas and opening up habitat for some of these native earlier successional species.
And the third one in the set is the Buick's wren.
Perhaps the shrillest of our three species of wrens that we commonly have in the area after the Pacific wren and the house wren is this medium-sized wren with the perky little tail.
And a really dramatic white eyebrow, right?
Dramatic eyebrow, eyeline, and it's got a little bit of a curved bill, extremely sassy, able to celebrate the pair nesting under your porch.
That's right, and it's scolding, too, particularly when they're defending their nest site. They have a powerful scold. And set two is the flycatchers. And the flycatcher is especially interesting to get the calls down because even if you can get a visual of them, you often cannot tell what you've got because they look so similar. But the calls are really quite distinctive.
And this is definitely one of my favorites. beautiful whip three beers. And you often hear these calls drifting far across Olympic landscapes. They will nest right here, basically in town, in the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, in the large Grand Fir. But they'll also get them right up to treeline, usually in the drier parts of the park, the dry Northeast Olympics. Flycatchers are part of a group of birds that can be quite assertive when it comes to nesting and guarding their nest sites. I've had a few times hiking up Olympic trails, having them come down and come and scold you.
And, the olive-sided
flycatchers, and I feel kind of honored by that. Just keep it moving along, and it's all good. Yeah, lovely bird to have. And these flycatchers, you know, as their name implies, they specialize in hunting from perches and sallying forth and grabbing insects out of the air and going back to their perch. And oftentimes they like large, complex canopies because that creates the natural canopy gaps and interior spaces that the birds use and hunt when they fly out into these little semi-open areas within the forest.
So how does their habitat differ from our next species, the Pacific Slope?
The Pacific Slope flycatcher is also a supreme generalist found across Olympic forest.
And they're even more common than the olive-sided, right? I mean, they just are all over the place. Once you start to listen for them, that was one that I finally learned a few years ago, and I was like, they are everywhere. And I never realized before how common they were.
The Pacific Slope flycatcher, they make that beautiful call, and they make a variety of little tings and notes, and sort of like the Townsend's warbler, they're so abundant that if you're attentive when you're hiking along our trails, it almost seems like the ambient noise level, we call it noise, but it's actually these birds can be very numerous and making their little ting sounds and truly define Olympic forests from sea level up to the subalpine, the Pacific Slope flycatcher.
The third one in our set.
One more of these lovely flycatchers is the Hammond's flycatcher. And you'll notice its call is a little bit drier and what I call burrier than the Pacific Slope flycatcher. These Hammonds are very common at mid-elevation in the drier Northeast Olympics. You'll hear lots of these if you're attentive when you're doing your summer hikes.
Yeah, it's one that I need to learn, and I'm sure that I have heard it but just haven't been trained to hear it. So it's a good one for me to brush up on. And our third set are ones that most of you will know, at least a couple of these. We're going to start with the lovely native band-tailed pigeon.
Great bird, great native, large bird in our forests. You can occasionally get them here in winter, but they're pretty much migrating in a little bit earlier than this, usually in April, and you'll hear their distinctive hooting.
And some people mistake them for an owl, but once you start to hear, they really sound way more like a dove than they do an owl.
Indeed. And they're pretty generalists in their choice of breeding habitats. You'll find them in a variety of different communities, all the way up to subalpine. And they make a variety of other distinctive sounds, too. Their wingtips tend to collide on takeoff, and they have some burry little almost purrs that they make.
That wing flap sound.
Wing flapping sound is very typical. And in the late summer and fall, you'll see them gathering around red elderberries and other, even coming down, dropping down to the ground at times to feed on berries. Lovely bird to have in our forests.
And the second one is a bird that we have not had here for very long, but is becoming increasingly common, right?
Indeed. The Eurasian collared dove, also known as the Bahama turtle dove, has taken North America by storm, and within the last 10 or 15 years, it has rapidly increased and moved out across North America, and we have them up in Alaska now, where I see them in the summer, and many points in between.
I didn't realize they were up in Alaska now.
They're getting around.
And just over and over and over and over.
Yeah, that's the one you can easily confuse with a barred or spotted owl. It's got that very distinctive hooting. I know out at Nash's farm last fall, we had like 40 or 50 of them in one of his apple trees in the end of summers. They're definitely a new denizen of our avifauna that's most likely here to stay. But they seem to be behaving themselves.
Yeah, they're not aggressive.
They don't seem to be displacing other birds, as far as I can tell, at food resources, and seem to be taking things sort of on the periphery and often keep to humanized or suburban or rural areas as opposed to moving into more pristine habitats.
Uh-huh. And the third in the set is the mourning dove.
How beautiful is that?
You think of it as sunset, just or early morning.
Indeed, and you'll see them oftentimes around our oaks and some of them are more wild, open habitats. They have a very beautifully long, pointed tail when they take flight, often giving that distinctive colliding wingtips sound when they take flight, but a really lovely native dove.
And our fourth set that we are going to talk about are the finches. And the first one is a purple finch.
These little purple finches almost sounds like you're rewinding a reel-to-reel tape at fast speed.
And that's a perfect description, isn't it? If people could remember what it was like to have like a cassette tape that you were rewinding.
And they're a very common native finch. They look like a scoop of raspberry ice cream, the males do, with that beautiful, beautiful red head. And you find them nesting at pretty much most elevations, mostly common more towards lower elevations and clear cuts, and very common out at the Claylock Lodge around the river mouth there. Quite easily discriminated from our next species,
which is the house finch.
The house finch, a little bit more of a chirpy call, not quite as fast. You can discriminate individual notes a little bit more. Occasionally have these very little burry little sounds within the call of the house finch.
And in terms of if you get a visual of these birds, is the house finch smaller than the purple finch?
I believe they're about the same size. It's actually a field mark that's challenging to denote in the field. Your best bets are by habitat and by their song, by their distinctive song.
And the habitat differentiation again?
You tend to see house finches a little bit more in humanized areas. Commonly get them at your bird feeders and your fence rows and shrubby thickets, and oftentimes more open early successional areas, typically often at lower elevation.
Mm-hmm. And our last one is American goldfinch. It's such a treat to see them in flight. And aren't they one of the few that will call in flight?
You bet. You'll see them bounding along. Many of these finches, they're seed specialists, and they often tend to wander a little bit more than our other species of birds. They have their distinctive conical bills for cracking the husk of seeds, and they tend to have a bounding, undulating flight, and particularly the American goldfinch. In flight, it'll give these beautiful snippets of songs.
They almost sound like a cartoon bird to me. And they're just brilliant yellow with black on their head and white in the wings.
And they've certainly done well at the hands of humans, how we've modified the landscape. So they're common around our forest edges and fields. And here's their delicious song.
That's such a pleasure. That's all we have got time for today. So thank you so much once again. And that's a nice note to go out on, that American goldfinch, isn't it?
You bet. Hey, this has been really fun. And go forth and celebrate birds.
Thank you. There are a couple of upcoming natural history events to tell you about, both connected to our fine local land trust. First, on Tuesday, June 28th, come help restore salmon runs to Snow Creek. Join the Jefferson Land Trust for a work party to pull the invasive nightshade that is crowding the creek near Discovery Bay. Go to saveland.org for more details.
Then the following day, Wednesday, June 29th, join the Natural History Society for a summer hike around Gibbs Lake County Park followed by a picnic lunch on the beach. For details and to RSVP, please contact Ken at jltnatural@saveland.org.
And here's our mystery sound again. It's a black-headed grosbeak, and they are so named not because they have ugly bills, but because their bills are so large, which allows them to easily crack open seeds and even snail shells. They are medium-sized songbirds and a common summer resident in our area. The male is strikingly handsome, with a black head, rusty orange breast, nape, and rump, black back, wings, and tail, and white patches on its wings. The female is much more drab, looking like a large sparrow with a strong white eye stripe and inordinately large bill. The other grosbeak found in our area, the evening grosbeak, is less common at lower elevations, generally found near coniferous forest, and the male distinguished by a bright yellow eyebrow. The song of the black-headed grosbeak is a melodious, sweet series of slurred, whistled phrases, similar to an American robin song. It is often referred to as a drunken robin. If you listen carefully, you will notice that it is delivered at a faster pace than a robin's, however, and is both huskier and higher in pitch. Both the male and female sing, which is not uncommon for finch-like birds. The black-headed grosbeak is one of the few birds that can eat monarch butterflies, despite the noxious chemicals that the monarchs accumulate from their milkweed diet. Black-headed grosbeaks eat many monarchs on their wintering grounds in Mexico. Our thanks to the great CD collection Bird Songs of the Pacific Northwest for the recording. And that's it for KPTC's Nature Now for the third week of June. Thanks very much for joining me, Charlie, and to Fred Sharp for helping train our ear up for a summer of fine birding. And thanks to all of you for listening. Remember, if you missed any of our program or want to listen again, this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 11:30 on Saturday, and available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. As always, happy trails!
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Skyline Pigeon, performed by Elton John.
Just let me wake up in the morning to the smell of new-mown hay, to laugh and cry.